Good evening, everybody. My name is Narendra. I'm an alcoholic. My prostrations at the holy feet of my master, and my loving greetings to all of you gentlemen and men who trudge. I have to admit, I'm very nervous to speak to you, even though I'm quite familiar with speaking, public speaking, and to large groups of people. Because I think if you look through the logs of all your speakers since maybe Mark began this meeting, and I think it was in 2020, so you probably have several hundred speakers, you probably won't find anybody with as little continuous sobriety speaking as I do. So, in many ways, I feel completely unqualified. I've been coming to this meeting sporadically for the last 2 years, and many of you who are on the screen now, but many who are not, are men who I've really looked up to and have wished that I could have what they have. Many of you I admire very much, so it's easy for me to, like, for example, I'm leading a meditation retreat right now. It's easy for me to speak to 100 people because, in many ways, I'm wearing a mask. But amongst other alcoholics, the mask has to come off. And so I pray to be able to speak truthfully tonight. And I think, if anything, that you can glean from my share, not that you take for granted your sobriety, because I know many of you work a program and many of you are of service and many of you are attending meetings regularly. But I would just say that, having gained some time in the program, it's super precious. And if you throw it away, it can be really hard to recover and get sober again. And that's been my experience. I've been recently watching a show. It's called The Chosen. I don't know if any of you have seen it, but it's a brilliant story, the life story of Jesus. And I've never really been called to Western religion. Even early in sobriety, when I first got sober, I was more drawn to Eastern religions. But right now, I'm very fascinated with the teachings of Christ. And I want to share a story from The Chosen, which I think is partly fictional because it relates to my journey in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the story of a lady named Lilith. She's possessed. She has demons. And a prominent rabbi of the time tries to perform an exorcism of Lilith, and he fails dismally. And then we find Lilith in the bar, and she's drunk, and she's begging the bartender to pour her one more drink. And reluctantly, the bartender pours her one more drink, her hair disheveled. And then Jesus appears and he puts his hand on her hand and he said, "This is not for you." And she freaks out. She's like, "I don't know who the fuck you are," but runs out and carrying her drink, but he follows her. And then he calls out, he says, "Mary, Mary of Magdalene." And she just freezes and she spins around and she drops her drink. She says, "Who are you? How did you know my name?" And he said, I was the one who created you, and I have redeemed you. You are mine." And he puts his hands on Lilith's face, and she undergoes a complete transformation from that moment forth, like we see time and time again in this program. There's a transformation. She became a new person. She became one of his closest disciples, Mary Magdalena. But that's not the part of the story that relates to me. I mean, it is, because I had 9.5 years of sobriety at one point, which I'll tell you about in a moment. But later on, Mary, she leaves Jesus to go back to the Red Quarter. Basically, she goes back to her old ways. And when Jesus notices that she's gone, she sends Simon and Andrew to find her. And he finds her exactly where she was before, in a dark bar, alone, sad, and drunk. And they tell her, Jesus is calling you. She says, no, I can't go back. And they were persistent. And they got her to go back. And there's this scene where she enters his tent and her head is just, hung down. And he turns around and he says, I'm so happy to see you. I'm so happy that you're back. And she just tells him, I'm so ashamed. You redeemed me. I owe you everything. And I threw it all away. And she said, I just don't think I can do this. I don't think I can live up to this. And he said, you're probably right, but you don't need to. All I need is your heart. And the rest will take care of itself.
Itself.
And, she drops her head and she's sobbing. And he tells her, he said, no, lift your head. I forgive you. It's over. And this, in many ways, has been a little bit of like my journey, because when I was 29 years old, I discovered Alcoholics Anonymous after a pretty crazy career as a DJ. I was living in the United States, and I discovered AA, and I had a little bit of time, and I met a beautiful Norwegian lady, and I think I had 35 days, and I think I proposed to her. And we had a child, and then we moved to San Francisco, too young. One recovering alcoholic, and one, she had no idea who she was getting involved with. And I went back out in San Francisco. And one night, I don't know, it was like 6 in the morning. I had been on an all-nighter, and I called my wife. We lived in a small flat in San Francisco. And I called my wife and I said, I'm on my way home. And she said, okay. And I drove 30 minutes from the crack hotel where I was staying to my flat, and I turned the key, and as I walked up the stairs and I said, I'm home, I heard an echo. And when I got to the top of the stairs, the flat had been cleaned out. There was just a little note on the floor that said, see you later. We're out of here. And I was absolutely just horrified. And I remember I just ran back down, I jumped in my Jeep, and I drove all through the streets of San Francisco looking for them. Of course, I never found them. They stayed at a friend's, safe away from me. And that was it. She moved back to Norway. She took my daughter away. Daughter was 9 months at the time. And the suffering of losing them, and also the, I think the motivation to get them back got me sober 9 days later. And although I never recovered that marriage, and although I've been estranged from my daughter ever since then, I did get sober. And I was very active in Alcoholics Anonymous in San Francisco. This was before COVID, obviously. So I was attending a lot of meetings, and I was sponsored, and I was sponsoring guys. And the second time through the steps, when I reached the 11th step, I was so smitten by meditation that I was sitting a lot of meditation retreats, both in the Bay Area, but then I started traveling. I started traveling to Thailand, and I was really a very ardent meditator. And at one point, I just felt this calling to come to India. I was on the Buddhist path at the time, and I asked my sponsor at the time, would it be okay if I went to India? And he said, sure. I think I was 5.5 years sober at the time. And then I asked my meditation teacher, can I go to India? And he's like, why do you need to go to India? Why don't you just stay here and meditate? And I didn't like his answer. So I came anyway. I came to India, and I met an enlightened master, and I haven't left. I've lived here. This is my 20th year living in a, we call it an ashram. Basically, it's a monastery. So I've been away from the United States for 20 years. And the problem is that in leaving the United States, I also left Alcoholics Anonymous. And even though I have been living a spiritual life, which involves many of the principles we practice in AA, I stopped attending meetings. Because there just are no meetings here in the English. I stopped calling my brothers from San Francisco. I stopped working with a sponsor. And then, well, you know the story, 4 years later, when the shit hit the fan here in India, I picked up again. And I can tell you, it was a horrible way to pick up. I was on the streets of Delhi. I was 9.5 years sober, and I ended up in some dive bar in Delhi drinking terrible Indian beer. And since then, I have struggled mightily to put any continuous time together. Now, I'm not going to say I haven't stayed sober at all during that time. In fact, this ashram became a safe haven for me because, we're kind of a locked-in community and there's no alcohol. And actually, alcohol is considered like really one of the biggest sins in this culture. If you go to a bar here, certainly, you'll never see a woman, and you're really like the dredge of society if you're drinking here. And so I would put some time together, and then I'd come basically while I was living here in this ashram. But then whenever I'd go back and I'd visit friends in the West, I'd drink and use again. And then I'd come back here and this became my place of refuge. But then I discovered how to drink here. It's really easy. You get in one of these tuk-tuks, it's three-wheeler, maybe you've seen them, a rickshaw, they call it. And you just drive into town. And so I've been living this tortured double life for 2 years. Some of you know that I have an alias, Australian Bob. For sure, I'm not Narendra when I go into these bars. You know, for sure, I can't disclose the fact that I'm the director of the main meditation and yoga school here in this ashram. So I put on different clothes and I have an alias, Bob from Australia. And literally it's reached a point, it's so pitiful that when I walk in, you know, they know me by name and they're like, "Hey, Bobby." And if, you know, I want to say that I had a big loss 5 months ago. I was in a 5-year committed relationship, and many of you know about this. And she just finally had enough of me and walked out. And I was devastated. And I just drank more. And my guru decided to take me on tour with her in Europe. But my ex was also there in Europe. And then when we were in Helsinki, I went to see my guru and I was crying. And she said, "Son, why are you crying?" when she's already with somebody else. And so actually, I had no idea. But Mark, who I worked with for a while, he used to say, "You know, Narendra, that's your lover. When you go to the, you know, that bar and you're Australian Bob, that's your lover. And your other lover is neglected." And I just came to know that my other lover was with another lover, just like I was with a bottle. And it crushed me. So when I was in Europe, I just basically drank my way through Europe. And I tried everything other than what you guys recommend, which means I tried doing this thing. I went to a counselor in Barcelona and he said, "You know, these AAs, they, you know, this whole abstinence thing and then all these meetings, you know, it works for them, but we have a different method here. What we do is we put you through a program for 1.5 years and then you're okay, you're fixed. You don't have to worry again. You're healed." And he said, and I asked him, I said, "Well, what would you do if I told you that I was drinking copious amounts every single day, that I wake up in the morning with the shakes? Would you say I need treatment? Should I be put in a facility?" And he said, "No, I wouldn't do that. I would take you on an outpatient basis and I would do therapy with you and I would do a tapering program. So what I would do is I would recommend that you reduce from this to this to this to this to this over the course of 2.5 months." And I tell you what, I really like this guy. I thought, that's fantastic. I said, this guy's telling me exactly what I need to hear right now. So I gave myself the perfect excuse to keep drinking. I kept tapering. But the problem is it didn't work, as you can understand. All the things that I never imagined that I would do, I've started doing. Like, for example, waking up in the morning and drinking. Never did that before. shaking when I wake up and needing sedatives to help calm my nerves. And yeah, I live with a tremendous amount of shame, like Mary did when she showed herself back to Jesus. The only problem is I'm too afraid to go and stand again in front of my master and admit that I'm struggling and that I've been struggling. You know, she's a very public figure. It's not like I can go into her tent. If I go and see her, it's in front of a huge crowd. And so I haven't yet leveled my pride and gone and, you know, again knelt before her and begged for mercy. So anyway, I guess, you know, that's really all I have to say, other than the fact that I know that I need to be surrounded by other alcoholics, and yet I really don't know how, other than online meetings. And quite frankly, they just, that connection isn't quite the same as when I was in a fellowship and I was face to face, and we'd have coffee afterwards and or breakfast before. And I really miss that intimate connection with other AAs. These Zoom calls, I mean, I'm grateful for them, and it's no excuse. But I have to admit that I have started thinking about moving back to the US or to a country where they have meetings in English, where I can attend them in person. So anyway, Jim, I don't know if that was at all helpful. I guess what I'm sharing is just the first step, a perfect example of the first step right in front of you. And I'm very grateful that you asked me to speak, even though, as I said, I feel unqualified. And Mark, thank you. Sorry, John, thank you for keeping me on the prayer list. I can definitely use your prayers. Thanks.